Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own after our brief week-long hiatus. We are now on episode 14. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined once again by my co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison. Welcome back.
Thank you. And Maggie Wiggin. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
All right, so it is now the All-Star break. So I went on break last week, and this week the players are on break, except for the Mets All-Stars. But it was still a somewhat eventful week in Mets land while I was gone. Every time I leave the Mets, there's something really dysfunctional. So maybe I need to stop leaving.
Yeah, just stay here because it all goes, it falls apart really bad when you leave.
So this iteration of Mets dysfunction, so the Mets played a weekend series against the Phillies, and on Friday night they lost in very 2019 Mets fashion, where the game was tied, DeGrom threw a gem, the game was tied going into the ninth, and the bullpen blew it again, as they have done many times, and this time it was Edwin Diaz and J. Arias Familia combined to give up 5 runs, 4 of which were charged to Diaz, and the game got completely away. After the game, apparently there was a team meeting in which Brody Van Wagenen reportedly threw a chair.
Well, which... I just want to say that it's weird to me that every time news leaks about Brody Van Wagenen, Jacob deGrom has been involved. Like, the first time it was the texting, he was concerned Jake was hurt and told Mickey to take him out of the game. And now the second time he was mad the bullpen blew Jake's start and threw a chair. So he's still, to me, acting like his agent and not a GM, which is kind of concerning.
Yeah. It is.
Well, he's also just not acting like a professional.
Well, like that too.
I mean, he's just, it's not to say that, like, everyone in his position needs to adhere closely to the long expected behavioral guidelines of what the role entails, but he seems to just be ignoring them completely and sort of just, I don't know, like, flapping about, just being super mad all the time, and it's not a great look.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess that, yeah, there's stress involved, but you can't be throwing chairs around either. And, you know, it getting out, too. It just, it makes the organization look bad. Like, the dysfunction clearly is, it just seems like nobody knows what they're doing, and it's just reaching ahead, and it's just a bad look for everyone.
And it's funny, because I feel like at the beginning of the season, and even prior to that, when Mickey Callaway was hired, when both of these men were hired at the respective times that they were hired, Mickey Callaway slowly acquired a reputation of being this, like, you know, dispassionate sort of manager. Like, oh, he never gets thrown out of games. He never, like, he's always just so even keeled, and he never shows any passion. He never lights a fire under the team. And then, like, he does this tirade against the media. And then Brody Van Wagenen, when he was hired, everyone was like, ooh, look what a cool customer this guy is. Like, so calm, cool, and collected, and now he's throwing chairs across rooms. So losing changes a lot, and it's kind of like they're both clearly passionate guys, but this isn't what people mean when they talk about showing passion.
Yeah, I think that's what Mickey's excuse was, that, well, we're just passionate guys who care, but no, that's not what passion is. Cursing out reporters is not passion.
Yeah, it's, you know what it, I mean, what it is, and I know, like, this is a phrase that not a lot, that people don't always like to hear, but this is a really good example of toxic masculinity, mm-hmm. where you know, instead of being able to talk out the feelings, it just turns into this like violent outburst, which doesn't actually help anybody. Nobody pitches better because Brody threw a chair in a meeting. Like, that's not a constructive thing. And it all, and you know, and there's been a lot of toxic masculinity throughout the organization for a long time. This idea that, you know, you can't take the time to heal from an injury. You just got to rub some dirt on it and get back out there. That's part of the same mindset of like, there's only one way to be a real man. And that is to be angry and, you know, physical all the time and not show any weakness. And it's a toxic idea, and it's can see it kind of pervading the organization in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like, it's okay to be passionate. Like, we want, you know, we want our players and our management and people involved with the Mets to be passionate, but this isn't the right way to channel that. Like, you know, it's okay to be frustrated that the team isn't playing well. I think all of us are frustrated that the team isn't playing well, but that's not the way that you display that frustration. You're misdirecting it at the wrong people. It's not meant to be directed at the media that are just trying to do their jobs. It's not meant to be directed at the players who are mostly trying their best every single day. It's not their fault. You constructed this team, Brody. Like, this is mostly on you. Like, I know that, like, the Wilpons, there is a constraint, you know, given our ownership, and a lot of this falls on them. I'm not making any bones about that, but, you know, Brody, you're the one that made this team. You have to own up to it. You can't throw chairs across the room. Mickey Callaway can only do so much. And he yelled at Callaway and told him to, quote, go conduct your fucking press conference, which, you know, Mickey Callaway then went and did that, to his credit, yeah, and didn't display anything was wrong. But, like, these aren't the right people to, like, take your anger out on.
Well, yeah, and then the press even kept asking for, like, Brody's side of it, or they kept asking for a press conference, and he refused to talk. So now he's kind of adopting the code of silence that the Wilpons are adopting, which, you know, leads to speculation. And, you know, now he's going to speak on Friday. But, well, the Friday is going to be all the good stuff. Like, oh, Pete Alonso won the home run derby. We had three All-Stars. Like, yeah. He's probably hoping it'll all blow over by then. And it probably could.
It probably will. And, like, keeping on the theme of toxic masculinity, not only, like, obviously the Mets are a highly dysfunctional organization in which this is rampant, and it's a problem from top to bottom, but it's pervasive throughout the sport as well. And we saw it on display in the form of Jake Arrieta's post-game interview when, after the Mets had a very heated game with the Phillies, and Todd Frazier is not completely blameless here either in this whole toxic masculinity conversation. I mean, I think he reacted the more level-headed of the two. But, you know, Jake Arrieta hit Todd Frazier with a pitch, and Todd Frazier's been hit with a lot of pitches against the Phillies this season. He's just kind of fed up with it. There was no indication that it was on purpose, but he was pissed off and fed up with it, so he voiced his anger toward Arrieta, and there was, you know, some words were exchanged. Benches kind of stood on the top steps but did not empty. It was a heated exchange, and then he hit another batter with a pitch right after benches were warned, and he was not ejected from the game somehow. Which,
like, know, why do you even warn the benches?
Yeah, what's the, like, point of that? Then it's just a performative gesture that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, and that's when Mickey got thrown out.
Exactly. Then Mickey Callaway got thrown out, kind of understandably so, because it's like, why are you warning the benches if you're not going to actually eject the player when he hits another batter, whether it's on purpose or not? That doesn't matter. You kind of have to eject him from the game then. It ended up working out to the Mets' benefit because Arrieta was all over the place that inning and ended up giving up a bases-clearing double to Tomas Nito, which ultimately won the game. But after the game, Jake Arrieta said about Todd Frazier that he would put a dent in his skull, which, how was he not fined by Major League Baseball for, like, saying that shit?
And talk about, like, just a disproportionate reaction. And I think, you know, tying it back to the larger theme of toxic masculinity, it came out a little later that Arrieta may be injured. And so you put it in the context, like, here's a guy who's incredibly frustrated, but how is it okay that the way he expresses his frustration is by, like, threatening serious physical harm to a colleague. Like, how is that? Like, that is, it's so normal and reasonable to be upset and, like, honestly, scared, because any pitcher with an injury, you know, the career is always at the forefront of the mind. Arrieta is not getting any younger. Like, feel those feelings. Like, have that, like, let those feelings be in you, and don't turn it into this, like, crush, kill, destroy attitude that really does get people hurt.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's the way he said it too. He was so calm, like nonchalant, like
stroking his beard. Yes! As he says, really creepy, honestly.
Yes, it was scary. Like, he 100% means this.
Yeah, it was one of those. Wild. It wasn't even one of those where he was like, it was almost creepier because he didn't really raise his voice. Yeah. It's not like he was like yelling into the mic, like, I'm gonna put a dent in his skull, bah! like super like macho screaming. It, the way they do in the game when they're like going face to face with each other. Yeah, it was like very calm, just, he can come see me, I'll put a dent in his skull, like straight face, like stroking his beard as he said it. Like, I have the image of like like a dude sitting behind a desk stroking a cat, like one of those like evil mafia dudes. Like, it like was very, very much that vibe, and I was like, well, that's like uncalled for and also extremely unsettling. Like, what? So yeah, that happened, and I, like Maggie said, I am deeply, deeply sympathetic toward players who are dealing with pain and injury and are frustrated that they can't execute on the field and frustrated that this may affect the trajectory of their career. But that's not Todd Frazier's fault that you are experiencing this. Again, this is completely misdirected frustration.
What did that chair ever do to Brody?
Right. What'd the chair do to you, Brody? Linda, you had the best tweet, in my opinion, in the aftermath of that. You were like, the chair is listed as day-to-day.
What a broken right for, like, front right foot.
The Mets will make the chair play through it.
Rub some dirt on it, chair. Get back out there.
Yeah.
We'll be available to pinch hit so that they can't backdate the IL stint. So yeah, other than the like organizational dysfunction, which is a separate thing, the Mets have just continued to Mets on the field. Like, not much has changed. They, you know, they continue to fall deeper and deeper into the abyss, and it's pretty much, you know, they're out of it now. Like, the season's essentially over. They're not mathematically eliminated, but they're, you know, practically eliminated.
And they're still talking about like waiting and see what happens, but like they could win 10 in a row. And unless the Braves, like, even if the Braves then lose 10 in a row, they're still behind. Like, it's
right.
There's no realistic scenario where they even are like kind of in it anymore. And like, at this point in 2015, they were at 500.
Right, exactly. Like, people keep bringing up 2015 as like a, nobody thought that team would do anything. True, but that team was still in a much better position going into this date than this team is going into.
If this team had started 11-1, we might be talking. They
right,
didn't.
Sure, because they would be around 500 right now if they had done that. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, there's nothing that, like, their season is over. They are theoretically closer in the wild card than they are in the division, but, like, it's at the point where they're, like, they have to jump so many teams that it's just impractical to think that there's any chance. There's only a few teams below them at this point.
There's only one team below them. Yes.
Did the Giants pass them? They sure did.
Oh, yeah, they sure did. Cool. Every team did, except for the Marlins.
Cool. The Mets have the second worst record in the National League. Awesome.
That they do.
Yep.
Great.
See what you missed.
It's good.
But Pete is so great.
But you guys, Pete.
We adore you, Pete.
I need to share a short vignette about my experience yesterday. I tweeted about but for those of you who do not have Twitter and did not see my Twitter like roller coaster of emotions yesterday, it was a day. So yesterday was the day I traveled back from my vacation in Cape Cod to Baltimore. I was with my
That's
parents.
That is a hike.
It is. It is. I was with my parents, so, like, my parents live in New Jersey. It's not quite the halfway point, but it's, like, a stopping point on the way back. So, like, my parents, I went in the car with my parents from Massachusetts to New Jersey. We got up early in the morning. We arrived in New Jersey around, you know, like, 3 p.m. or something like that, 2 or 3 p.m. I had some late lunch. We had eaten breakfast before we left. I had some late lunch, you know, we had spent 5 hours in the car or whatever. And then I was like, I'll stop at home for a little bit, relax, eat some late lunch, and then get back on the road, head to Baltimore. Usually the drive from New Jersey to Baltimore is about 3 hours. So I was like, I will leave around 5 o'clock so that I will get home at 8 o'clock, to watch the Home Run Derby, to watch Pete Alonso, because I desperately wanted to. And usually I don't, even though I was leaving at 5 o'clock on a Monday, like the early part of my drive in New Jersey is on not so well traveled roads. So I was like not super worried about rush hour traffic. I would maybe hit a little bit of it. But by the time I got to the heavy rush hour in Philadelphia, I would be like past rush hour. Like it would be too late. So I was like, okay, this drive should be fine. I get to the 295 extension of 95 between like near the New Jersey, Pennsylvania border. That road is apparently under construction and 3 lanes go down to 1. And I was in peak rush hour. Womp. So I pulled up. Usually I don't have like Google Maps up when I'm doing this drive because I do it all the time. So I don't need it. But like I pulled up Google Maps, like I was at a dead stop and I was like, shit, this is gonna, you know, impact my ability to watch the Home Run Derby. I pulled up Google Maps to see like how long of a delay it was. And it said half an hour. And I was like, okay, like that's not the worst. I had already hit a little bit of tail end rush hour New Jersey traffic before that. So I was like 45 minutes delayed at this point. I was like, it won't be so bad. Like I'll catch the end. But it was, Google Maps lied. It was like over an hour delay. There were points where I had the car in park. Like I was just like on my phone, car in park, feet up on the dash, like we were not moving. So I was like, crap. And so I like, I have the one of those things that you can clip, like the phone docks that you can clip to your like vents on your car, so you can like prop your phone up when you're using maps or whatever. So I was like, I can stream the Home Run Derby. So I like downloaded the ESPN app while I'm sitting in traffic. I downloaded the ESPN app and like pulled up the streaming Home Run Derby album. Like at least I'll be able to like listen to the audio and like take a quick glance every now and then. So I like pull up the Home Run Derby. I get like extremely uneven like internet connection streaming and like I managed to like listen to it enough. And so I'm like driving. I finally get out of the traffic. I'm like, oh my God, I know that Pete's advancing. I can hear it. Oh my God. I get so excited. I get back to Baltimore at 10:15 at night. I had spent over 5 hours in the car at that point and over 10 hours in total that day. In my neighborhood, I have street parking. Like, I don't have a dedicated parking spot and it's 10:15 p.m. on a Monday night. So I drove around for another like 15 or 20 minutes just to find a parking spot. So I like park in the car. As I park in the car, Pete advances to the final. And so I like grab all my shit and I'm like parked like 3 blocks away at least from my house. So I had to park far away. I grab all my shit. I run as fast as I can, like armload full of stuff from my car from vacation. I run down the street. I must have looked like a freaking mad woman. I run. I sprint down the street. I open the door. I get in just in time to see Pete's final round. And I just like, yay. It was like such a cathartic. I just like screamed. And I was like, he did. And the dog was like barking around me like, what are you talking about? Why are you losing your shit? And it was just a glorious, glorious moment. I was so happy. I'm so happy for Big Pete.
Even on Slack, we're like, where's Allison? Did she make it home?
I made it just in time.
When we were all very worried.
I made it just in time. It was so good. And you know
good
what?
Good job.
Screw the haters. There are online haters. I don't like any of you.
No. Like, deal with it.
It's not a great look. Like,
no.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah. There are.
I mean, to the people who are like, he didn't really win. I mean, he did win. Yeah, he has the trophy.
That's the point.
The game has rules. By the rules, he won the game. That's how it goes.
And, like, I don't know. Like, Okay.
And he didn't use up all his time either. In his none of the rounds he needed all the time. So he could have had
his pitcher was terrible.
Was awful.
Yeah, there are several
so bad.
There are several counter arguments to completely dismantle the haters. One is that all of you people who are talking about how mad you are that Pete didn't deserve to win and Vlad Guerrero had the best performance, he deserved to win. You are the same exact people bitching about Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s 8 home runs in the home run derby in the first place. Don't pretend you weren't, because I saw
and
those
Vlad
takes.
Was amazing, and yeah. I'm so glad I got to see it. It was an all-around incredible show, and he should be so proud, and I'm so glad that I got to see it.
So you are wrong
that
2 times.
That absolutely is legit. No one is saying that Vlad wasn't fantastic.
Yep. And what people who were complaining about Vlad being in there in the first place fail to understand is that this isn't simply everyone who has the most home runs so far this season should be the people that are in it. It's not even about in-game power for the most part. It's about who takes the best batting practice, who has mm-hmm. the best raw power. And if you have seen, if you have either witnessed with your own eyeballs Vlad Guerrero Jr. take batting practice, or have read reports from people who have witnessed Vlad Guerrero Jr. take batting practice with their eyeballs, you know that he every bit belonged in this derby, and he showed you exactly why last night.
Like, but can I also just say that they didn't reseed after Christian Yelich?
Yeah, which was
so
a bad
move. Should have been the one seed. Yeah. So he would have faced Vlad Guerrero in the first round.
In the very
so
first
thank you
round.
For. Sorry, Matt Chapman.
Yeah. Sorry, Chappie.
Yeah, sorry, Chappie.
But yeah, so that's one poor argument. You are the same people that were complaining before. Don't pretend you weren't. Another failed argument is that this isn't, like, the format isn't about, it's not about who hit the most home runs total. That's just not how how do you not understand how brackets work? Like, ugh.
And you
Pete
know
didn't
what,
use all
they
his
could
time.
Do it. They could do it without brackets, and it would be boring.
It would be so boring.
They did do it like that.
Yeah,
and it's just not an exciting, it's not an exciting format. That's why they changed it. There's always trade-offs in the format of any competition. And in this case, there is, you know, some platonic ideal of fairness versus interest.
What and makes the most exciting event, yeah.
And it's an exhibition, so go with the interest. It's not a difficult choice to make.
Just, you don't get, like, all the people who, like, are whining about how Vlad put forth the best performance, he put forth an extremely exciting performance, in part because he had that matchup with Jock Peterson in the semifinal, which would not have happened if you had a straight, like, everyone just hits for 5 minutes, see who can hit the most, and who can hit the most wins. Then you don't even get that intrigue in the semifinal that you were all super excited about. And I was
super
excited.
And that semifinal was amazing.
It was great.
I don't want to, like, spoiler alert on my walk-off win for the week, but, like, that was some of the most fun I've had related to baseball in ages. Because it was just so thrilling and never-ending. And, like, no, in a quote-unquote fair format, that would not have happened. So
right.
So
you
there.
Can't have your cake and eat it too, people.
Shut it, haters.
And also, people forget Josh Hamilton didn't win either. Everybody talks about Josh Hamilton. Oh, he had this great round, which it was. It was amazing. The crowd was into it. Everybody loved Josh Hamilton. He didn't win. But does that take away from Josh Hamilton's performance? No.
Right.
You can appreciate great performances and also acknowledge the correct winner.
Yeah, exactly. You can acknowledge how great Vlad Guerrero Jr. was without tearing down Pete Alonso and saying he didn't deserve it. That's nonsense. And, like, not only did Pete not use all of his time, like you'd think, I said this recently, just I was having a conversation with someone on Twitter about this. You'd think people who watch baseball all the time, would understand the concept of the person that goes second doesn't have to use, like, they just have to win by one. The team that walks it off in the bottom of the ninth doesn't have to score any more runs after that because they've won. The team that scores the most runs in the World Series doesn't always win the World Series. If you win two of the games in the World Series and you win them 13-2 and 15-2, but you lose the other four games 4-3, guess what? You lost the World Series even though you scored the most runs. Do you want to change the World Series to just add up the runs over the course of the whole series and the team that scores the most runs wins? Because we could do that.
Sounds like a nerd thing. Like, just saying.
That's not the way these competitions work. If you want a more like purely fair competition, we could do that, but it wouldn't be as fun and everyone would complain about it.
Oh, totally.
So,
also, can we just say that like Pete had the more like he I think if you see his spray chart, it was gorgeous. But like I feel like he batted like he would in a game, kind of. Like even Jeff McNeil said, I told him, take it up the middle. It'll go out.
His pitcher. Oh my god. I know it's his cousin. I'm sorry, Pete's cousin.
He almost got hit by a pitch.
It was just don't have a family member pitch to you in the Derby.
Nice. But they're not a professional. Like, they had legit, like, professional BP guys. Stroling and Vlad Guerrero and Jock Peterson had professionals throwing to them. And they were perfect.
Made a huge difference.
And it showed.
Made a huge difference. Because a huge part of it, and the announcers were saying this, and they were absolutely correct. A huge part of the home run derby is the BP pitcher throwing it to the same spot over and over and over and over. That's exactly how you go on a run. And I feel like Pete, like, obviously he did good enough to win. He did great. He hit many homers, but he never, like, you watch Vlad and he would go on runs where he was hitting like five in a row out of the park. Five in a row, just like bam, 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 which is how he was getting 29 in one round type totals, because Pete's pitcher was not doing that for him because he was not throwing it in the same spot over and over. So Pete wasn't able to like repeat the exact same swing over and over and over, just hit a bunch in a row.
Okay, I found this tweet by Tim Finnegan, who sometimes writes for us, and I think he perfectly summarizes it. Big Pete winning the Derby despite Cousin Morgan consistently changing eye levels, painting the corners, and throwing a few brushback pitches back was impressive.
Yeah, exactly.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, it's even more impressive that he was able to. And they were saying this about Acuna Jr. as well. He was able to use all fields, which makes it almost even more impressive. Like, obviously, Vlad had, in the whole tournament, the most impressive, like, raw power of anyone.
Because he could sell out on every swing. Yeah, he knew where the ball was going to be.
And the sound on it was amazing. Oh,
that sound was so pretty on Vlad's. They were awesome. It was just like, and you could hear the whiff of the bat, too, like, how fast it was going. His wrists just moved so fast. Holy shit, that bat speed, man. Unbelievable. So he's just, like, pulling everything. He's just like, boom, crack, boom, crack.
Could.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, he displayed the most impressive, just like, raw power of everyone, indisputably, because his pitcher was good and obviously he has the talent. But, you know, Acuna Jr. and Pete Alonso both were able to go to all fields and just hit the ball where it was pitched, kind of like you would in an actual game. And I think that that's that's impressive in its own right as well.
And poor Acuna was gassed, too. I think he gave up with, like, 2 seconds left. He was like, nope, I'm done.
Can't do it.
You can't do this.
Yeah, it takes a lot of endurance.
Like, his advice was, they said conserve your energy. He said he didn't take any practice swings in between. And then they said take breaks, make sure you drink a lot of electrolytes. So I think, him conserving his energy really did give him the advantage. I know it wasn't Vlad's fault he had to take extra rounds,
in that regard was definitely Jock Peterson, because halfway through that first the kind of main block of that second round, he was already looking gassed. He was running on fumes, but he just kept running and running.
He
kept, like, surprising even himself. Like, I feel like in the Vlad versus Pete debate that this has sparked, like, Jock was amazing, and I had so much fun watching him because he kept, like, he didn't have those, like, those ones where the sound just knocks you off your seat, but he just kept hitting them, and they were just flying. They would just keep going and going and going. You're like, I can't believe that's out. And that was super fun. And watching, I felt very, very well represented on the field because he seemed exhausted the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I too am exhausted.
Yeah,
watching that. Well, he even said in his interview after he was eliminated, he was like, I'm kind of glad he won because I'm done. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, he was just like, I feel bad that he has to keep swinging. Yep. So yeah. Home run derby, super fun. We're so proud of Pete Alonso. We're
Yay,
so happy
Pete.
That
and
our
McNeil.
Big,
yeah,
beefy
McNeil
son.
Being supportive.
McNeil's the best hype man of all time. Holy shit.
So adorable. I love them.
We love our players. It's a shame the Mets are so bad because our players are so awesome.
And it really speaks to just how bad the rest of the Mets are, that they have three no-doubter all-stars and a lot of other, like, solid young talent, and they are awful. Like, legit, just straight up garbage.
Bad.
The Mets!
Woo! Sorry, does that count as negative? Probably.
Probably. It's okay. Yeah. We're really happy about Pete, though. We're ending the segment on a positive note. We're super happy about Pete. So when we get back, we will do a seventh inning stretch where we answer some of your emails. So stay tuned for that.
What's up, baseball fans? There's nothing better than being there. The stadium, the snacks, that loud crack of the bat on the ball. But sometimes getting those tickets feels like a real struggle. I mean, are ticketing websites making it this hard on purpose? Imagine what it would be like if those sites actually cared about getting you that perfect seat. With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek does just that. The app pulls together tickets from all over the web, rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and then shows you the view from your seat. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you're not going to show up and then not see the game. With over 50,000 five-star reviews, the SeatGeek app is by far the fastest and easiest way to find tickets. Go give it a shot today, and SeatGeek will give you $10 off your first purchase when you use promo code SBNation. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code SBNation for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code SBNation.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. So it has been a while since we have done a mailbag segment, so we are now doing a seventh inning stretch. Apologies for the backlog on these. I took that week off, and it's just been a couple weeks since we've been.
And
able
we really
to...
don't like you guys anyway, so.
Yeah. Been a couple weeks since we've been able to fit it just kind of into the show, because we like to try to put it in shows where we have, like, less content, like other content. Because, you know, so it's the All-Star break, so we figured it's a nice time to answer some emails. So first, we'll start off with James, and I'm just going to read this email verbatim because he had some extremely nice words for the pod, and I'm just so incredibly humbled by this email because it blew me away. I actually almost cried when I read it. It's just so great. Just wanted to thank you guys for all that you do. As a 24-year-old man, I've spent the last few years coming to terms with and trying to deprogram a deep sense of internalized misogyny that has existed in complete opposition to my mind and heart. Society is wild, and I imagine a lot of men experience this sort of horror at themselves, and it's been hard work, but I'm happy to say that listening to a pod of their own every week and exposing myself to your voices is a helpful part of getting that shit out of my system. I've only been into baseball for a few years and made the highly deranged decision to be a Mets fan from from the get-go. Y'all have been a critical part of me learning how to understand, among many other things, why that was a very, very poor choice, but an incredible one as well. Thank you so much, James. That is so nice.
Really lovely.
Yeah, that's an amazing email.
It made my heart so happy to read that. Again, we talk about this a lot, but it's just incredibly validating when we hear from people who like completely reaffirm why we started this podcast in the first place. Like things like this remind me exactly why we started this podcast in the first place. It makes me so happy.
Well, it's a good reminder that if you want to be, if you want to learn new things, if you want to try to be a better person in whatever way that looks for you, you can do it anywhere. Like there's so many different people and media sources and activities. There are a million different ways to just learn new things about people who are different from you. Like that is, and it's great to have this illustrated of just what that might look like.
Thank you, James.
And, yeah. And even to know that we've, you know, reached one person, that's enough for me. I mean, I hope we're reaching more people, but I'm glad, you know, at least somebody was able to maybe learn and change from our show, which is great.
Yeah. It's about the broader purpose, because it's not just about, although these things are important, it's not just about raising awareness about each of the issues we talk about every week individually. That work is super important, but it's also just about, you know, normalizing different voices in the sports podcasting space, in the sports space in general, like, you know, just exposing people to different points of view. And it makes me really happy that we've been able to achieve that for at least one person. So speaking of different voices, I want to share another email from Jay Wu, who talked about how one of his favorite episodes that we've done was the online harassment episode, and it reminded him a lot of experiences that he's had as an immigrant from East Asia. So he goes on to say that during the 2017 World Series, when Yuli Gurriel made those racial gestures against Yu Darvish, if all of you recall, Yuli Gurriel kind of stretched his eyes to make, you know, a gesture at Yu Darvish, and it was, you know, seen as extremely racially insensitive for obvious reasons. So Jay Wu tweeted about this, and in the comments of his tweet, there were people making other racially inappropriate comments after seeing his profile picture. He says, "Then they assumed where I was from and harassed me with being against that country. I wasn't even from that country, though." So they made an assumption about his heritage, about which country he was from, and he wasn't even from the country they were talking about. "Even though it was too harsh, I ended up deleting my tweet to protect his safety. In addition, since then, I try not to tweet related to racial things." So this goes back to our theme from the online harassment episode, where this is actually changing people's behaviors. So he had the courage to speak out about this as an Asian person, and he had to delete his tweet because people were being jerks to him in the comments, and then he doesn't really tweet about this stuff anymore. So that's an important voice that's now lost because people are being jerks. Just don't be an asshole. Again, very simple. So he goes on to say that, like, the current environment politically, specifically related to immigration policy, has affected him personally, and strict immigration policies has made his company stop his work visa process, and he was unable to get two jobs because of it. So he shared his frustration about that on social media, not his Twitter, but his more personal social medias like Facebook. And he said that he got harassing comments even from his Facebook friends, and he was super taken aback by that because these weren't just strangers now. These were people who he was presumably friends with in real life making these insensitive comments. Some of them even commented, "Go back to your country." You know, so these are things that, you know, it's unfortunate. And he brought up the same thing that we brought up in the show, saying, like, these are never things that you would say to someone's face. This is all, like, the things that the online world has wrought. People are super, super brave behind their keyboard, and they say really, really insensitive things that you would never say to a person's face. So Jay Wu, we're sorry that you've had to deal with that, first of all, and second of all, we really appreciate you sharing that with us. And you know, we hope that in the future people are kinder. So I also want to share an email from Steve McGowan. He wrote to us also in response to the online harassment episode, and I'm going to read a part of the email. He said in part, "During my time as a professional educator in a university environment, I had to confront a number of students about harassing language they were using, referring to one of my female coworkers. And it was a real wake-up call to me about the difference between being in my position as a cisgendered heterosexual male and the position that virtually anyone else in society finds themselves in." He goes on to share a fantastic piece from the Chronicle of Higher Education, which we will link in both the show post and the tweets this week, which he made his students read about the experiences of female professors. So thank you, Steve, for reaching out to us about that and sharing that experience. As someone, this hit particularly close to home for me as someone who is a female in science and, you know, up until very recently was a female in academia. So, you know, I have had my fair share of that. I have seen it happen around me to others. So I know that this is an issue in academia as well, not just in baseball. So, and I think Maggie can speak to that as well.
Sure can.
So, yeah. Thank you, Steve. We will link that in the show post for people to read. So finally, we got an email from Oslo, Norway. So again, going back to the getting emails from all over the world is super cool for us.
Yeah, Opoto International.
Hell yeah. So Nils or Niles, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, wrote into us. First, he said that while he understands that personal touch often adds to podcasts, sometimes he thinks it takes too long for us to get around to the Mets content, which is mostly what he listens for. We're really sorry. We like to banter sometimes.
I'm going to go with sorry, not sorry, because yeah. I'm a talker. That's why I'm here.
Sometimes we talk about bagels.
But I know it's not to everyone's taste. Sorry.
There is a little sliding mechanism. If you're listening to this on, you know, traditional, you know, listening mechanisms via iOS apps or Android apps, you can just slide your finger along. And we usually provide, this is a good point to bring this up. We always provide timestamps in the show post on AmazingAvenue.com for when each segment starts and ends. So if you are only interested in hearing about the Mets on a given week and you don't want to hear about the generalized baseball content that we're doing that week, you will get a timestamp for that. If you are a non-Mets fan listening to the podcast or somebody who's just like over the Mets, as I can imagine many of you are, and you don't want to hear about the Mets in a given week and you just want to hear the second half of the show, there will be a timestamp for that too. So we always, always, always try to provide timestamps. We understand that not everybody has an hour plus to dedicate to podcasting every week, especially when there are so many other great podcasts out there competing for your time. So we totally understand. So that's fine. But he does go on to finish the email in a complimentary fashion, which we really appreciate. He said, "Keep up the good work. I love your insight, analysis, stories, and general view of the club and players." So thank you so much for writing in all the way from Norway. We really appreciate it. So that concludes our seventh inning stretch for this week. When we get back, we will do a quick discussion of the All-Star Game in general and some questions that we have about it and just our general feelings about the All-Star Game. So stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Avery Truffleman, and I'm the host of Nice Try, a podcast about utopia, a place that is perfect and does not exist. This season, we're traveling across time and space to explore seven different attempts to design a better world. And what happens when those designs don't go according to plan? From Jamestown, the first permanent English settlement in North America, and Levittown, a series of suburban developments built in the 1950s, to Chandigarh, a modernist Indian city that's also responsible for the chairs in Kourtney Kardashian's dining room, and Biosphere 2, an early 90s experiment that sought to create a completely enclosed, self-sustaining ecosystem. And yeah, some of them worked out better than others, but they're all fascinating. Listen and subscribe to Nice Try today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app. From Curbed and the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, host of The Vergecast. We've been revamping The Vergecast more and more lately, and we're coming out with episodes twice a week, sometimes even a third bonus episode. On Tuesdays, I talk to influential people around the world of tech, like Microsoft founder Bill Gates and other tech execs like the founder of Lime Scooters, the CEO of Beyond Meat. We've also been talking to a lot of reporters and academics about the major pressing policy issues in tech, like Facebook's content moderation, they're not doing great, YouTube's harassment plan, or lack thereof, and whether or not the government should break up Amazon, which... maybe it should. And then every Friday, I sit down with executive editor Dieter Bohn and Paul Miller for our chat show. We cover the latest in tech news and product reviews. We bring in our other reporters from around The Verge. That show is a party. You should listen to it. You can hear all that and more if you subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'd love for you to listen and join us. So again, subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you there.
All right. So our baseball segment this week is a little bit of a different flavor, but just, you know, it's the All-Star break. So we figured it's timely to talk about the All-Star game.
And speaking of, the National League is losing.
Of course they are.
What else is new?
Because Nolan Arenado didn't make a play. Why,
what?
Nolan? Why? I know.
That's like why he's here.
Yes. I don't get it.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Bro, that's why you're
wrong.
Here. No Mets yet, right, Linda?
No, Kershaw is in, so that means Jake probably next inning.
Okay.
All right, we'll make this fast.
Make this fast. So before, speaking of the Mets, before we go on to talk about more generalized things about the All-Star game, we just want to reiterate that we are so happy that the Mets have three very deserving representatives in the All-Star game this year. Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, and Jacob DeGrom, all really, really deserving. Obviously, Jake has the track record, and even though he started off his season kind of shaky, if you look at his overall numbers now, he's right up there with the top pitchers in the National League again, righted the ship. You know, Jake is just back to being Jake pretty much, which is really, really good. You know, Pete Alonso already showed on the big stage that he can handle it just fine. So really, really thrilled that Pete is getting to show the entire baseball world what he can do. And I'm glad that Jeff McNeil is getting some recognition for what he's done. You know, I think that the players, you know, recognize probably more than the fans someone like Jeff McNeil and appreciate it more, which is why he got elected by the players. You know, it's not easy to sustain a 350-ish batting average over the time span that he has done so.
Especially in this era of exactly. The way pitching is done.
Yeah.
And strikeouts being up. And because his on-base percentage, I think, is over 400.
That's why he bats leadoff without Brandon Nimmo around. So, yeah.
Bat leadoff with Brandon Nimmo around.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Throw that out there. But anyway.
If Brandon Nimmo's career is okay and he's not completely dead forever, they would make a great 1-2 punch in whatever order you please at the top of that lineup. But Jeff McNeil is a special type of player because he's a throwback type of player. He doesn't strike out. He doesn't walk. He's a contact-oriented hitter, which is a type of hitter that is, you know, for better or for worse. I'm not casting judgment or saying it's like a good development or a bad one. I'm objectively saying that that player is dying in baseball. There aren't too many like Jeff McNeil left out there. So it is fun for, you know, him to be able to display his unique in today's game talent on the national stage. So I'm very excited for that. All-Star game happening as we speak. So generalized All-Star game things, we decided to just pose some questions amongst ourselves and see what the three of us think about these things. We did not share our answers with each other ahead of time, so we may end up disagreeing on some of this, who knows. So what do the two of you think of the new voting process as opposed to the old voting process? Do you think it's an improvement? Hate it.
Hate it.
I'm not crazy about the process in and of itself.
Yes.
But I will say, I actually think it helps prevent some of the like ridiculous ballot box stuffing that some fan bases will do each year.
I don't think it did though, because Albert Amora was in the final three.
But he wasn't elected out of that final three. So that's what I think it serves actually a really useful purpose, in that, you know, Almora was crazily at the top of the list, but when the whole fan base of all of baseball gets to vote and their team's guy isn't in, their favorite didn't make it, then everybody who's left is voting for the actual best player. So while it was kind of a little backwards, and yes, like Cubs fans, just take a step away from the computer for like 5 seconds. What it actually turned out was pretty good, not perfect, because there were plenty of good players who just didn't make it into the top three. But like
Pete Alonso,
much better than previous years, much better than previous years, where like, I mean, you know, Pablo Sandoval would not have been the starter in 2013. What if this had been the system? Like David Wright absolutely would have been elected as a starter from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think it is an improvement. I think that there's still improvements to be made.
And I don't know what the answer is, because I think we talked about this briefly a couple weeks ago, where Tommy Pham said small market teams are hurt.
Yeah, and they are.
Yeah, and that's absolutely correct. And also apathetic fans. Like, we don't want to be voting Pete while our team is getting slaughtered. Like, there was just no excitement there. There was no incentive to vote for Pete because we were all mad at the team at the time. So apathetic fans, small markets, you're kind of limiting who even gets votes right off the bat. And which it showed. Like, the Cubs were very excited about their team. Fine. And it also goes to show you also, like, I know the argument is it's for the fans, so they should get to vote who they want in, but at the same time, is that fair? Like, well, they're still Tampa Bay fans. They want to see their guys in there.
Well, and we can say it's for the fans, but it carries much more weight in other ways now than it used to. So, like, it determines things like arbitration costs and that kind of thing. So it's not just a show as long as it's being used the way it's being used, which is fine. I mean, it's understandable that it's being used this way, but like, we can't pretend that like it's just a token at this point. And like, so the best solution that I have heard, although it would certainly have a big impact on the level of fan, you know, of fan engagement, is to have the starters selected and then have fans vote for everyone else.
Okay.
So having some sort of, you know, whether it's a combination of like manager voting, player voting, whatever, to find like who are the really best guys. And now, okay, we've picked out all the best guys. Who is your favorite who hasn't gotten in yet? And that, I feel like, would give you better results in terms of the top getting the correct acknowledgement. But then then the fan voting is much less than it was. And that, I don't know if it's something that MLB wants.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. To me, yeah, I agree. I think the fan voting is, like, disproportionately important. I think that, like, it doesn't make sense to me that the fans are the ones that get to pick all the starters, and then the players pick all the players and the manager and baseball pick all the reserves. Like, to me, it should just be, you know, like, say there are, how many spots are there actually on the All-Star team? I don't know, 20 spots.
A million. They could just make more, like, 8,000 people are playing this game tonight.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, a lot of spots. Take the number of spots that there are, and obviously spots shuffle because, like, players are hurt and then other players get picked as replacements. And I think that that process should be the same. Like, the fans shouldn't vote on, like, replacement players. They should just pick them. But, like, say to start off, like, if you have a roster of, like, 20 people, you pick, like, 10 are fan-voted and 10 are picked by, like, half and half. And then it's not necessary. And then the starting lineup is picked by, like, the manager out of, like, that pool of 20 players that were half voted in by fans and half picked by baseball. I don't know.
I think that's a good idea, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, isn't the point of the manager that he makes the lineup? Isn't that part of, like, his job? I mean, the manager does make the decision of, like, what pitchers to pitch when, because that's essentially entirely controlled by the manager in this version of the All-Star game. But I think the manager should get a little bit more power over the starting lineup as well somehow. Or, like, maybe there can be, like, one, like a top three fan favorites, like the top three vote getters have to start or something like that. I don't know. Top three vote getters overall in each league have to start at their respective positions. Something
on the
like
flip
that.
Side, like, let it be whatever it is, like, you know, let Almora start in center for all I care, but then don't let it carry weight outside of it just being a show.
Right.
Like treat it more like the Derby, where it's not going to determine how much a player gets paid or whether he gets into the Hall of Fame. Like, that's the problem is that the process and the impact don't line up.
No.
And if you're not going to change the process, then you got to change the impact. I think it's easier to change the process.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That is the inherent problem, is that they're just misaligned.
I agree.
Well, and then there's also like the people who like have to go, that people are always mad about, like the Marlins have to have somebody. So they're kind of there by default.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
How you end up with some wacky type players.
Yeah.
I think it's good that every team gets a representative.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it, because again, this is something that's for the fans. And
yeah,
if you're
you want a reason.
Yeah. If you're claiming it's for the fans, then you have to have a representative from every team, because you can't say it's for the fans and then exclude half the fan bases. That's not
bad. Teams have fans too. And I say that as a fan of a bad team.
Right. Exactly. Even though the Mets would have a natural. Even if the Mets weren't required to have a representative, they would have them, I think. But, you know,
got it right.
Orioles fans are people too, guys.
I could not, gun to my head, $1 million check on the table in front of me, tell you who is representing the Orioles in the All-Star game today.
I know because I saw the
life depended on it.
Maggie, it's John Means.
I kind of, look, Allison, I know the name. And that's where it ends.
Which is, you know,
I'm
what?
Sorry.
You know what? And like, it's not actually credit, like, small side note, credit to John Means, because it's not the token All-Star I expected. Not like, I mean, I expected it like during the process of pick, like by the time we got around to like picking who was going to be in the All-Star game, John Means was already having a very good year. So I thought it was a distinct possibility that he would be the Orioles token All-Star. But entering the season, if you asked me who the Orioles All-Star would have been, I would have been like, Trey Mancini, probably? And Trey Mancini is having a good year. But, like, John Means came out of freaking nowhere. All credit to
good
him.
Good for him. Good for him.
Well, good for everybody.
Yeah,
Hashtag the All-Star game.
Yeah,
I think Shane Green is the Tigers.
Yep. Yep, sure is. Sure is.
Yeah.
So
I think the Mets had didn't Daniel Murphy represent them once before he turned good?
Before he was
Murphy.
Good.
Yeah, he was their default.
Mm-hmm. That was like one of the
that
more like,
about right.
Tokeny All-Stars the Mets have had. So by the, like, kind of going back to the conversation about how, like, you know, the process doesn't align with, you know, like the intent or like the outcome as far as like how much weight the All-Star game is given. Do you guys agree with the decision to like not have it count anymore for home field advantage for the World Series?
Yeah, because that was just it, like, I think somebody pointed it out. It like took the fun out of it. Like, you would never see, I forget what year it was, when somebody came up, like, batting backwards. And, like, they would kind of, like, fool around, mess around, like, when Torii Hunter robbed Barry Bonds. Like, it was fun.
Yeah.
And, like, making it mean something, it took the fun out of it. And that's not what it's supposed to be. And Jake
also...
is in!
Yay, Jake!
He's
and
facing
also, like...
Springer right now.
Oh, boy.
It's also kind of it takes the fun out of it, but like not in a evenly distributed way.
Yes.
Yay!
Can Jake strike out the side again?
Ooh. So, you know, if you're an All-Star from the Yankees, then you are pretty much always going to be highly incentivized to play. Like, it means something. But if you are not, then that same urgency isn't there. So when it means something for the postseason, you're just sort of, not everybody is playing the same game.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And it's, I think, like, you obviously can't have some postseason meaning that would hold the same for everybody. So it's best to just ditch the the World Series thing altogether. Yeah, I totally agree.
I agree with that.
It means
as well.
Fun. Let it be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Let the kids play.
Let the kids play.
Let the kids play.
And yeah, by that token, like, you know, the more you make it mean something, then the less it makes sense for every team to have a representative, for example. Mm-hmm. Because then
The Marlins could ruin it for, like...
Exactly, because you're weakening your team. If you really want to win the All-Star game, you're weakening your team by having the lesser teams have to have a representative, because then that, for every token All-Star, there is a player who's really, really good who didn't get in, which, you know, happens and it frustrates people, but you know what? Like... I think that it should just be fun and that every fan base should be able to root for their guy, even if it's just one. Oh, did Jake give up something?
No. He got Trout this time.
Ooh,
he's so good.
And the inning's over. Yeah.
He was too good. It was too fast.
The story of Jacob deGrom.
He
was so quick.
He's just wonderful. He's just so good. We're so lucky to get to watch him.
And he had to take that. He got his revenge against Trout.
And then this is awesome because now everyone else also gets to watch him for a day.
Like Pete, too. Everybody gets to appreciate our polar bear like we do.
Although people hate him, when a book is written, he is
persona non grata right now.
Yeah.
It's so not fair. He doesn't deserve it. It's not fair.
Pete Alonso is Cleveland's Peter O'Brien. They're both named Pete.
No, don't compare them.
I know. Peter O'Brien is a monster who does not deserve to walk among men.
Not the same.
Just if anybody is not great on sarcasm, I definitely don't really think Peter O'Brien is a monster, but he might be.
Disclaimer.
We don't know.
This podcast
does not have an official stance on whether Peter O'Brien is or is not a monster.
Who should or should not be walking among men?
It's possible. Anything's possible.
When speaking of David Wright tangentially, when a book is written about Jacob deGrom, like a book is being written soon about David Wright, it will be called "He Was Too Good: The Jacob deGrom Story." He was just too good. So the last thing I kind of want to cover about the All-Star game is, so we talk about how, I think we're all on the same page about how we swing the pendulum more toward, you know, having fun and less toward it meaning a lot and being like a super competitive, intense game. It should be more about the fun. But the downside, because, you know, it's a double-edged sword in both directions. The downside, what you're giving up when you make the game more lighthearted, more fun, count for less, is that sometimes the super exciting players that you want to see in it don't participate. Either because they have an injury and they don't want to risk the rest of their season, which is on the more understandable spectrum of things, or they just decide, you know, I'm not messing with, you know, if you're, especially pitchers, this comes up a lot with pitchers, like they don't want to change around their rotation for the All-Star game. So if a guy pitches the last day before the All-Star break and the team decides we don't want to rejigger our rotation because our ace is participating in the All-Star game because we're competing for a playoff spot, then that guy doesn't participate. And I think that is like the one drawback of the All-Star game meaning less, is that there's less of an incentive for those guys to participate. And then that means that you don't always see the best players. So what do you guys think of that?
So I think it's definitely true, but I think the drawback has a little bit of a positive spin in and of itself, which is that what that combined with the pay structure of MLB means is that the players who are highly incentivized to participate are the young ones, are the new faces. And that to me is really exciting. Like if I would love for all of the best players across the board to participate, but if it means that we're getting more Pete Alonso and less Bryce Harper, not that my secret shame is that I like Bryce Harper, but like I've seen plenty of him in All-Star games. I want everybody to be seeing Pete Alonso. So like,
right.
If I have to choose between all of the forever best and getting to see some new exciting talent, then I would go with the young talent. It's just from a fun perspective.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. But my issue is with the All-Star game too, is I mean, I might have totally been ruined by the NHL All-Star game because they had different events to showcase all their players. Like the goalies get their own. They have like a skills competition. They have a fastest skater competition, which Kendall Coyne participated in this year, which was amazing. And she didn't come in last, which was also amazing. So like Jake pitched one inning. What if he was our only All-Star? That was it. That was all, the only appearance of our All-Star. And like, what if you don't have somebody in the home run derby? What if your All-Star doesn't get in the game? Like, there should be something that showcases why these guys are here and what skills they do have and what makes them so special. And I think MLB needs to do a better job at that. I don't know what the answer is. Like, I don't know, like have, when the problem is they're too worried about injuries. Like, you can't have, like, I don't know.
Well, that's the drawback of having it when you have it. But there's not really, you know, it's, there's not really a Pro Bowl type. I mean, arguably the Pro Bowl shouldn't be when the Pro Bowl is either.
No, because nobody cares.
Right. So it's definitely, but I would love to see more skills competitions. Yes. I don't know what it would look like.
The KBO style bunting competition. Did you guys see that?
That would be amazing.
Where they bunt.
I mean, it would be fun to see like a sprint off
a
between.
Fastest runner.
But that also, like, I know that every player would be thinking like, but my hammies. So it's tough, but that I think would be so exciting. I would love to add more skills.
I want to see Ahmed Rosario max it out first to third and win that skills competition.
Yeah. Well, because even like in hockey, what they did was for the goalie competition, it was like your save streak. So Henrik Lundqvist won. And what they did was have everybody from his division take a shot against him and whoever made the most saves, like, and then who, like, a goalie from another division would face everybody in his division. So it also kind of kept the rivalries going to create the intrigue around it. And so, like, I don't know, have like Jacob deGrom pitch to Ronald Acuna for like the last round in the home run derby or something. Or like Jacob deGrom gets three pitches to see if he can strike out. And if he hits a home run, it's a bonus or something. But again, a pitcher would be like, I can't do this. I might get hurt. So,
yeah, I think the pitchers are always going to be
weird.
I think I would say that there will never be any kind of skills competition that would attract any good pitchers just because they are so delicate. But
they're on their routine or,
But I would love to, like, again, sprinting drills, you could set something up with, like, with fielding. I don't know. Science, make it happen.
Yeah, you could do like I want to see Arenado fielding balls. Like
the bare hand slow roller play, like who's the best at that? And like not just I think that you could do something akin to that bunting competition, but make it more exciting than that, like set up targets around the field and like not just a home run derby, like see how many you can hit it out, although I'd still like to keep the home run derby and have the power guys there, but have the guys like Jeff McNeil that have incredible bat control and are more like singles hitters who hit 350, like have guys like Jeff McNeil participate in a skills competition where they set up targets around the field and they throw batting practice to them and you have to clonk each target one time or something like that to all fields.
Yeah, that would be super fun.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, one at bat in an All-Star game is not showcasing your stars. It's just not.
Yeah. So more skills competitions would be super fun. It's just hard to envision how they would do it.
It
would be really fun. So one last thing I want to talk about is not the All-Star game itself, but back to the Home Run Derby for a second. Because obviously this year's Home Run Derby was more exciting than any Home Run Derby I can think of in previous years. And part of that was because there were just so many more home runs hit in this Home Run Derby. I remember going in, the announcers were saying like one announcer said to the other, like, what do you think's a good like first round number? What do you think these guys should be aiming for? And he was like, well, years past around 12 or 13 should be like a good number to advance. That was blown out of the goddamn water. Like if you had 12, you were eliminated in the first round.
I think Carlos Santana had 13.
Yeah. And he was like eliminated right away by Pete Alonso.
I think he was the lowest. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Chapman had something around there, like maybe 14 or 15. And he was just eliminated. Like you had to hit 20 to advance basically in the first round. It was wild. And obviously, you know, a big component of that is the juiced baseballs. Like, it was so obvious, like, so acutely obvious.
When they quietly go in to replace all the juiced baseballs with unjuiced ones to try to pretend like they never knew about this to begin with, because that's what's going to happen, I really hope they put aside, like, 10,000 or however many future games were future derbies worth they will need, just take a big old vat of the juice balls and only ever use the juice balls for the home run derby. If they can juice them extra, I don't know what that would involve.
The London
but
balls.
Just juice the shit out of that ball.
Use
tennis I want the
balls.
Next one to go 550 feet. That's what this is all about, right?
Yeah, it's about extremes.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't really watch Home Run Derby because I find it boring. But I only watched this year because, one, Pete was in it, and I love Pete. And number two, because I knew the balls were juiced, and I'm like, how far are these bad boys going?
Well, very far. I'm killing my walk-off win. But, like, yeah, I will watch, like, usually the first round, and then I sort of drift away. I was absolutely riveted this whole the whole night, and I watched the entire thing, and it was amazing, and I woke up my neighbors.
Yep. I will say, like, I have been, you know, an extreme, because there, you know, it's, when you talk about the baseballs being juiced, like, I don't think that you can say that it's objectively bad or objectively good that the balls are juiced. It's all about what type of fan you are and what style of game you prefer. Because we have had differences, even in the Amazing Avenue Slack among us, about what type of game is preferred. There are definitely folks in the Amazing Avenue Slack who, I mean, maybe they think that, I can't speak for them, but maybe they think this version is, like, out of hand. But, like, they didn't like 2014, for example, a year when offense was extremely down and every game was a pitcher's duel. On the other hand, that's the type of baseball I prefer. I actually prefer pitcher's duels to, like, slugfests. But
for real baseball, me as well. For the home run derby, too. Nope.
Exactly, but the home run derby is not real baseball. It's a skills competition, so juice the shit out of the baseballs for the home run derby exclusively. I am all on board with that. Do it.
But you're also kind of watering down the specialness of the home run. Like, every game is a home run derby.
Yeah. I agree. And that's
like
Adani
Echevarria could enter the home run derby.
See, I thought that too. And then the actual home run derby happened with the juice balls. I was like,
this is awesome.
This is at another level.
Well, I mean, the home run derby with the juice balls, yes, Adani Echevarria could enter the home run derby and maybe hit 10, like a respectable number for a previous home run derby, but he's still going to get blown out of the water by Vlad Guerrero Jr. hitting 30. So to me, it doesn't matter. Like, they're still on a relatively even, they're on an even playing field still because the balls are juiced for everyone. Right. So, like, it's just going to elevate the overall number of home runs hit, which is what
they
juice
them extra for Jairus Familia.
Yeah, right. Oh, boy. Just have Jairus Familia throw the home run derby.
Well, Acuna was listening to Danza Kuduro, probably to get him in the mindset of being against Familia.
I mean, it's a good choice because it's a good, good song. Either way. But I do like that in addition to obviously the increased excitement by the both the format, which I think is better this year than in years past, and that and set up the epic semifinal between Vlad and Jock Peterson. In addition to that, I think that this home run derby was more exciting than years past because the players, I think, seem to be taking it more seriously. And they commented on this on the broadcast, and I agree with them. And I think it's some combination of, and the broadcasters mentioned both these factors. I think it's some combination of the prize money being an incentive, especially for the young players, because for Pete Alonso, who won, it doubled his salary, more than that. It over doubled his salary, the prize money.
It doubled his lifetime earnings, I think.
In Major League Baseball. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, because his bonus was better than many, but like not a big honking one.
I think he got like
$900,000
bonus, which is, you know, a bonus. Like, it's nice. Like, you know, that's still like the players that are signed, that are drafted, that get bonuses in the first place that are worth, like, anything, are, you know, the one percenters, so to speak, of the draft. But that's not the crazy bonus that, you know, that many of the Mets who were drafted this year got. It's not what Brett Beatty got. So
no, and I think they said Vlad Guerrero's was over $3 million, his bonus.
Right, right. And that was the, you know, international, which is a little different, but
yeah, but yeah.
But still, yeah. So Pete's was not, you know, it was a bonus. It was a nice bonus, but it wasn't a substantial bonus. And so this prize, you know, after you take taxes out and everything, this prize like doubled his earnings, total earnings playing baseball. So that's something. So the players are both motivated by that, especially the young players. And, you know, there is just a general culture shift in the game. And this doesn't just have to do with the juiced baseball. It has to do with, you know, the player's approach at the plate, the emphasis on launch angle, on exit velocity. There is a culture shift in the game that now emphasizes the home run, for better or for worse. And so I think that players are just seeing the home run derby as a more valuable showcase of that skill, which is now more important in baseball than it has ever been.
Well, and we did see a lot of young guys in it this year, like two rookies were in the finals.
Right?
Yeah, and that's awesome. And not to keep gushing about Pete, but for him to take a timeout just to get the crowd into it.
So good. So good.
Oh, I loved it. I loved that he did that. Like, and that's what you want. You want personalities on a grand stage.
And Acuña Jr. saying, like, going up to the mic and saying, like, Vladito and me are going to be in the finals. Like, two young guys, like, you know, like, we're going to be in the finals. We're going to do it. Like, even though he was saying that it was going to be him and Vlad and not Pete, I still loved it because I was like, yeah, that's the type of swagger you want. These young players, these 20-year-olds are out here being like, yeah, we're the best. We're the best there is at this. And I loved it. I loved it.
Well, I think you made the good point, too, like how a lot of that ties into the U.S. women's soccer team. Like, they have confidence and swagger, and that's absolutely okay.
Yep, yep. And that's a perfect bridge to my walk-off win. So I guess we can...
Yay!
I guess
Shall we
transition to that now. So yeah, my walk-off win for this week is the U.S. women's national team winning their fourth
Yay!
World Cup! Oh my god!
USA!
USA! USA! It's so funny. I think I posted this on Amazing Avenue Slack, but it was like, so they handed out, so I went to, so this all ties in with my walk-off win, the whole excitement of the whole day. So when I go to Cape Cod every year with my family, I have a really close friend that lives in Boston. And so I always go to visit him because I don't get to go to visit him that often because Baltimore is pretty far from Boston. But when I'm already in Cape Cod, which is only an hour away, I usually take a day trip while I'm at the beach to go visit him. So this year we decided to do our day trip on the day of the final. And we went to City Hall Plaza in Boston. And it's just like this wide open area, like in front of City Hall, like a big square, and they put a giant screen up outdoors, and like
that
everybody
so awesome.
Congregated, and it was such a great atmosphere. So not only was like it an awesome game, I was so excited. It was such a fun atmosphere to watch it in, and I think I posted an Amazing Avenue Slack, like, me every other day of the year, America kind of sucks, like, not feeling super patriotic. Me on the day of the U.S. women's national team being in the final, and it was like a selfie of me wearing like my U.S. women's national team jersey and like sunglasses that were painted with the American flag. Like, the most American I will ever feel is when the U.S. women's national team is playing in the World Cup final.
I feel that, except for the Olympics, but I get it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm right there with you with the Olympics
for sure. I also get super into the Olympics as well. I enjoy both the winter and the summer. Mostly the summer, but both. I really like.
A little bit better, but I do both.
Yeah. And I mean, especially obviously, the U.S. women's national team plays in the Olympics too. So.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So, yeah, super, super great. I like this team. I can't even emphasize enough how much this soccer team means to me and means to so many people in this country, means to so many young women in this country. Like, I see so many parallels between the 1999 team and what they meant for me as a young girl growing up playing soccer. Like, that team made me feel like I could do anything. That team made me feel like any of my dreams were possible. And that's what this team is doing now for a whole new generation of young girls. And every time I think about it, it just makes me super emotional. And if anything else, it's even better for them this time around because you have role models like Megan Rapinoe, who is unabashedly herself and is out and proud, and her showing the world that we are a diverse team. we are a proud team and this is who we are and we're not sorry. And it's just like so great. It gives me so much life, you guys. And they're just the best in the world. And they're athletes and at the peak of their powers, just killing it.
And I think like, so youth soccer is one of the fastest growing sports there is now. And I think they can take advantage of this, you know, and how inspiring they are. Like you said, the 99 team did that for a generation. And now these ladies can do it for a whole nother generation.
Yep. 20 years later. It's awesome. And they have four World Cups now, and they've never finished worse than third place. Pay the women equally. Pay them more.
Pay them more.
They outdraw the men. They draw more revenue than the men. This World Cup final was watched by more people in America than the men's World Cup final was. From now on, it's called the World Cup and the Men's World Cup. It just is, because this team is so dominant and it's filled with so many players that are so likable. And yeah, so I said this, like, I drew the parallel between Pete winning the Home Run Derby and the U.S. Women's National Team winning the World Cup. Like, both were responded to by, like, people saying that they were too excited, that they were too arrogant. And it's like, you know what? Don't let anyone dim your star. Don't let anyone tell you that you shouldn't be proud of what you've accomplished. Because it took them, both of them, a hell of a lot of work to get where they are now. And they should celebrate. And they should be joyful. And they shouldn't have to apologize for it. And I think that, you know, the U.S. Women's National Team gave a perfect example to, you know, young women everywhere to take up space and to be unabashedly joyful about your accomplishments and say, I'm here, I'm great, and I'm not sorry about it. And it just makes me so happy.
Like, I want to be them when I grow up.
I know, right? They're just so badass. So, a lot of them are younger than me, and I want to be them when I grow up.
Exactly.
Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win was, I had to take some time off because I had too much vacation time and I was kind of forced to start using some of it.
Oh no, how awful.
Yeah. So I was forced to take last week off, and then my cousins called and said, hey, we're down the shore. Do you want to come down? I was like, oh, what a coincidence. I'm off this week. So I went down to the shore, which is where I usually go every year, but this time it was in July. I usually go in August, which totally threw me off. But it was great. I was in the heart of Philly territory. All my cousins are Phillies fans because my mom is from Philadelphia. But
nobody's perfect.
Yeah, nobody's perfect. We
down
still
the Jersey
got along.
Shore is always Phillies hats everywhere. It's awful.
Oh my God. The Bryce Harper stuff was everywhere. Woof. Ugh.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. I was like, I can't even bring my Mets stuff this year.
Oh, I wear my Mets stuff all the time. I don't care.
I can't even wear my Giants stuff. That used to be my one thing, and they even took that from me. But, you know, I never get to see my cousins very much because a couple of them live in California, and one lives up in Boston now. So this was the first time I got to see all of them together in a really long time, which was really nice. And it was just totally unexpected. It was a nice surprise, and I was glad I was able to do it. And when USA beat England, I was following on Twitter on the beach. I yelled USA across the pond.
Hell yeah.
To make sure England heard that across the pond on the beach.
They did. I hope Piers Morgan heard it.
Yeah.
Asshole.
I hope the wind like drifted it in his direction, because I was still into it, even though I was roasting on the beach. But I was very happy, and I'm happy they won. And I was also happy the Mets won because they were playing the Yankees that day.
Yeah, right. Maggie, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So my walk-off win, shockingly, is the Home Run Derby, the whole thing. Like I said, everything I usually have been one to watch, like, just the start of it, maybe, like, the first four or five batters, whatever. But Vlad's showing from the start, and of course the promise of Pete kept me going, and that's just, the whole show was really fantastic. It was my first time seeing the new format, and it was also my first time watching the ESPN2 Statcast version, which was wonderful with some really good commentators. And it just, like, it I had so much fun. I like woke people up in my building right around the time of the second tiebreaker in round two. And it was, yeah, it was just a fun, relaxed baseball night where nothing really mattered. And I want more of that. More, but there couldn't be more. If there was more, then it wouldn't be the same. So it has to be just as it is. And I'm just really glad that the kids went to sleep on time. That's basically what got me there. So yay. Thank you, Home Run Derby. Thank you, Pete Alonso. Thank you, Vlad and Jock and the whole crew. Thank you, Pete's cousin, for not sucking moderately more than you did.
Yay.
That's what I got.
Fantastic Home Run Derby all around. And now we are in the midst of a very good All-Star game because Jake already pitched and he pitched beautifully. So,
do you want to know the synopsis of his inning?
Okay. Oh, and Pete's in.
Oh, Pete's in.
Oh, yeah. Here comes Pete. Jacob DeGrom, this is from Tim Healy, pitched a scoreless third inning. George Springer struck out swinging. DJ LeMahieu sent a bouncer back to DeGrom for a ground out. Mike Trout, who homered off DeGrom in last year's All-Star game, popped out to first. He threw seven pitches.
Yeah, baby. That's our boy. Go Jake. Go National League.
And he faced the top of the order. These were, you know, the
best
top
of the best.
Yeah, the best of the best.
All righty. So that does it for this week. You can join us again in your feeds next week. I think we're having a special switcheroo edition. We'll see. There's been talk about switching co-hosts between the Amazing Avenue audio suite of shows. So that might happen next week. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, you can go to AmazingAvenue.com, read all of our fantastic content. We've got all the aftermath of Pete's Home Run Derby win. We've got All-Star coverage happening. We've got a bunch of articles going on, like assessing, you know, where the Mets are right now, you know, where we stand, what about our players and things like that. So look out for that. You can email the show if you want to be featured on one of these seventh inning stretch segments. Keep emailing us. The email is aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us. We are at a pod of their own on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Linda is at Linda Serovich, and Maggie is at Maggie162. So you can follow all of us on Twitter, follow the show on Twitter, follow Amazing Avenue on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Amazing Avenue. Please subscribe to the podcast. Rate and review the show. It really, really helps other people find it. Original music for this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there is no crying in comics.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hey, it's Charlie Harding from Switched on Pop, the podcast about the making and meaning of popular music. And this week, we get into K-pop. It is a thing that I just haven't known how to wrap my head around, but the music is everywhere. And it is now a global phenomenon. It is a part of the U.S. pop market. It is charting on the Billboard. It's playing on SNL. And this week, we talk about BTS and Halsey's Boy With Love, talk to some K-pop experts, and really get to the bottom of how ought we listen to K-pop as a music, as a genre, and as a multimedia phenomenon. Check it out on Switched on Pop, anywhere you get your podcasts. We drop episodes every Tuesday.